my great honor to be with all of you this evening. I exalted God brothers and God sisters. And to all of you, it was approximately 5,000 years ago that Sri Sri Radha Shyam Sundar descended into this world. There are four Yuga avatars in each of the Yuga cycles or kalpas. But only once in a day of Brahma does Lord Sri Krishna appear in his most complete loving form and pastimes of Vrindavan. When Krishna appears, he brings his eternal counterpart, his Ladini Shakti, Sri Radha, their most intimate loving associates, Nitya Siddhas, the river Yamuna, the Govardhan Hill, and the forests of Vrindavan. They all descend from the spiritual world so that Krishna could perform his beautiful pastimes of love, and in doing so, attract our hearts. It is truly a rare benediction. And considering every 8,600,000,000 years Krishna and Vrindavan descend, Srila Prabhupada explained 5,000 years ago is so recent. On Kartik Purnima of this month, 500 years ago, Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to Vrindavan. In his 48 years of performing pastimes in this world, only 2 months he lived directly in Vrindavan, wandering through the 12 forests. And 50 years ago, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada departed from Vrindavan. Carrying Vrindavan within his heart, he traveled the world to give what Lord Chaitanya tasted 500 years ago from what Krishna manifested 5,000 years ago. This is the pastimes of the Pancha Tattva. It is described that the Pancha Tattva, they descended from the spiritual world to plunder the storehouse of love of God, to taste the contents, and to distribute it freely, everywhere, not considering who is fit or unfit. although the Panchatattva was mainly in Navadvip and later in Jagannath Puri, they were always absorbed in the pastimes and in the loving relationships of Vrindavan. Srila Prabhupada explains that Swarup Damodar Goswami, who is Lalita Sakhi in Sri Radha Gopinath's Leela, Ramananda Rai, who is Vishaka Sakhi, Gadadhar Pandit, who is Srimati Radharani, Rishabhanu Maharaj, the father of Sri Radha, incarnated as Madhava Mishra, Kirtida Devi, Sri Radha's mother, incarnated as Ratnavati Devi, to give birth to Sri Radha Rani in the form of Gadadhar Pandit. And Srila Prabhupada explains that according to the records, none of them ever directly came to Vrindavan. Although they were manifesting Vrindavan to everyone they came in contact with. They were most intimate, transcendental personalities of Vrindavan. So being in Vrindavan is not only a physical experience. It is a state of consciousness. When Srimati Radharani met Krishna in Kurukshetra, she expressed that Vrindavan is my heart, and I want you to come back. You've been away for so long. Krishna never takes a step out of Vrindavan. And that means that Krishna also never takes us, he never leaves the heart of his loving devotee, where he manifests himself as Shamsundar. Premanjana Churita Bhakti Vilochanena. When our eyes are decorated with the ornament of love, then we can see Krishna. Srila Prabhupada taught us this principle. He worked very hard, and his loving associates, many came here to work so hard for him, to create the Krishna Balaram temple. In those days, the guest house at Krishna Balaram temple was the most comfortable guest house in all of Brajbhumi, so that people from any part of the world could come and live simply but comfortably. Things have changed a lot on a physical level since those days. But Srila Prabhupada wanted some devotees to stay here. And in one lecture, he explained who he wanted to stay here. Those who were truly following in the footsteps of the six Goswamis. He said, if a group of my disciples are really honestly and sincerely following in the footsteps of the six Goswamis in Vrindavan, That will be my glory. He also wanted people from all over India to have the opportunity to come to Krishna Balaram Temple and receive the association of devotees who were living and teaching the true message of Lord Chaitanya. And he also explained how many foreigners come to Vrindavan, and they should have a place where they could really come in connection with pure devotional service, as our acharyas have taught. And it was especially Srila Prabhupada's wish that his devotees from all over the world would have a personal home here in Vrindavan. In 1971, when Srila Prabhupada came back with just about 40 devotees, it was just around that time that the land of where Krishna Balaram Temple was given to him. And actually, I remember those days. Raman Reti was like a distant land from the town of Vrindavan. And almost everyone was coming to Banki Bihari Temple, Radha Raman Temple, Radha Ballabha Temple, and of course the six Goswami temples were all there, where Gaudiya Vaishnavas were coming. And Raman Reti, it was forests and pastures filled with thousands of cows and peacocks and parrots. A place where monkeys were actually really happy because they had so many trees and fruits. And devotees were thinking, who is ever going to come to Raman Reti? It's so far. But Srila Prabhupada had such a vision. From those little tiny rooms at Radha Damodar Temple, where for many years he slept on a little bed made out of rope. Rarely electricity or running water or anything. And he prepared himself to bring the world to Vrindavan and to bring Vrindavan to the world. We are very grateful. The greatest love we can share with each other is to inspire that gratitude in each other's hearts. Because if we're actually grateful, then we will recognize and understand the value of what Srila Prabhupada sacrificed so much to give us. We will never, ever minimize it. We will never, ever think that something else is superior. Srila Prabhupada gave Krishna consciousness in such a deep and honest way. And he explained to us that he put his devotional ecstasies into the purports of his books. So if we can inspire each other with that gratitude toward Srila Prabhupada and what he has given us on behalf of the Gaudiya Parampara, then we will make gratitude is not just a emotional feeling. It is an emotional feeling that is dynamic, that activates determination and sacrifice. Otherwise, it's something very hollow. If we're grateful, we will reciprocate. Just to say thank you is a very easy thing. But unfortunately, even that is so difficult for most people. But to actually be thankful means a willing to reciprocate. Srila Prabhupada made things really simple. He took the most profound concepts and made them so accessible. When somebody asks Srila Prabhupada, how can we show our gratitude to you? Srila Prabhupada said, wholeheartedly accept what I've given you. That means read my books carefully. Follow these four regulative principles. Chant at least 16 rounds every day. Live in the spirit of the servant of the servant of the servant. Accept what I've given you and share it with others. Srila Prabhupada wanted us to share this philosophy and lifestyle of bhakti with the whole world. Because he felt such compassion. Srila Prabhupada was living in New York City 50 years ago, at this time. He had so little materially. He was appealing to his well-wishers and spiritual family in India to help. And actually, some didn't have means, and others did have means, but they just thought it was impossible. Why should we give something to something that is never going to be successful? If you go to New York City and you see the big buildings there and all the traffic and everything else, and you think of a 70-year-old Swamiji with little white plastic shoes walking down the street. And he was seeing big, beautiful American cars and incredibly luxurious parks and buildings and homes. New York at the time was the wealthiest city in the world. But he did not want to take anything. He wanted to give. because the fleeting pleasures of material enjoyment, proprietorship, if we're completely captured by this illusion, we really feel it's valuable. We really feel it's something to dedicate our lives to make progress with. But the self-realized souls, they understand the nature of the eternal soul. They understand Krishna. Srila Prabhupada quotes Srila Rupa Goswami that if you are attached to your family and friendship and love and all your wealth of this world, then I warn you, do not go to the bank of the Yamuna, because there Govinda is standing in his threefold bending form. And when you see the beauty of Govinda, when you experience the love of Govinda Dev, then nothing of this world can have any attraction or appeal in comparison. When that love for Krishna awakens in our heart, then we see something really attractive within this world. We see limitless opportunities to serve Krishna. With the wealth of the world, Hare Krishna Maharaj, with the resources of every variety of in this world, the joy of the soul is not to possess them. The joy of the soul is not to enjoy them. The real happiness of the soul is whatever we have or don't have, we please Krishna through our service. So simple. And love of God means unmotivated, interrupted, loving service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And this is the essence of every great religion. To blissfully sacrifice our body, mind, words, and life to this higher principle of seva, of pleasing Krishna. And Krishna comes to Vrindavan to teach and to reveal the most intimate abode of love. Where Krishna reveals himself to a devotee as their child, as their friend, as their lover. That is Vrindavan. Srila Prabhupada was in Vrindavan, even in New York City, and he wanted to share this wealth. And today, in the morning, we had a very holy ceremony, samadhi ceremony for His Grace Ramananda Prabhu, who in a few months from now, it will be 50 years from when he met Srila Prabhupada, along with his brother, His Grace Gargamuni Prabhu. And he was a teacher, He was doing social services. He was an activist. He really wanted to help and make a difference in the world. And when he came in contact with Srila Prabhupada, extremely intelligent, extremely powerful in every way, he recognized Srila Prabhupada's compassion, his wisdom. There was only a few people who were around Srila Prabhupada at that time. He was one of the originals. And he gave his life to help. Outside of Vrindavan and a few other places in India, nobody even knew what a Hare Krishna was. But he dedicated his life to spread the Hare Krishna movement. Srila Prabhupada would love to say that in Tompkins Square Park in 1966, and Srila Prabhupada, he didn't even have a mridanga. He just had a little bongo drum. Do you know what a bongo drum is? It's just a one-headed small drum that you play like this. Someone gave it to him. And Prabhupada would chant Hare Krishna. And he said Brahmananda was the first to get up with his arms raised and dance. He loved Srila Prabhupada. And in his love, he wholeheartedly accepted everything that Srila Prabhupada was teaching. And Prabhupada loved him and trusted him. It was very meaningful to Srila Prabhupada. He wanted to fan that little spark of bhakti that was inherent in everyone's heart and make it blaze into prema, ecstatic love for Krishna. And to have someone you can truly trust that will give their life for the higher mission. Srila Prabhupada never considered it his mission. He always said, the mission of my Guru Maharaj. Sometimes Srila Prabhupada would say to all of us that you are all the representatives of my Guru Maharaj. My Guru Maharaj has sent so many nice boys and girls to help. So people like Brahmananda Prabhu, Prabhupada completely trusted, because even though he may make mistakes and all of that, he gave his heart and his life. He became the first president. He was the president of 22nd Avenue. He arranged for Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita to be published by one of the leading publishing houses in the world. He was one of the first devotees to help Prabhupada financially. And he was at Srila Prabhupada's side most of the time. throughout Prabhupada's manifested pastimes. There's probably hundreds, if not thousands, of photographs of Brahmananda Prabhu at the side of Srila Prabhupada in different places, in different instances. This is something we should meditate upon. Because acharyas teach by their example. We have been discussing gratitude, how essential it is to have a grateful heart, grateful to our guru, grateful to Krishna, grateful to the Vaishnavas. Otherwise, true bhakti cannot grow. Srila Prabhupada was so grateful. He was giving us everything. Yet he was far more grateful for us to accept it. And especially to help the mission of his Guru Maharaj. Any little thing a devotee did to help fulfill the order that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur gave him, he was so grateful. And he expressed it. And he didn't just express it directly verbally, but he expressed it through his heart. And even devotees who never spoke a single word to Srila Prabhupada, who may have never even directly personally seen him, or who may have seen him from a distance giving a class, even such devotees were giving their hearts and their lives as much as Prabhupada's personal associates because they could feel his gratitude. Every seva I do for the deities, every book I distribute, every round I chant sincerely, every time I read Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, Chaitanya Charitamrita, whatever service we're rendering, we could feel Prabhupada's gratitude. We knew Srila Prabhupada was grateful. And that's what empowered devotee and empowers devotees to carry on. And that is why it is so important for all of us to live with gratitude and inspire one another in that gratitude. Malati Devi is here, Lakshmi Moni Devi, Batu Gopal Prabhu, Chandramali Maharaj, Mandakini Devi Mataji. These early devotees they can explain far better than me what the Krishna consciousness movement was that created this Hare Krishna explosion from nothing. A devotee who just joined a few months or a year would go to a city where there wasn't a single devotee, there wasn't a single person from India, and they would start a center. And the center would grow. Malati Devi Mataji was just wrote a beautiful letter to His Holiness Mukunda Maharaj, who is having a health crisis. So let us all take a moment to pray with gratitude to Him. And she was living with Shamsundar Prabhu in Oregon in some forest. And Mukunda Maharaj said, come to San Francisco, we will start a temple for Srila Prabhupada. This is in the end of 1966. They said, what's a temple? He said, it's a storefront that's painted white. How is it a temple? The devotees were going all over the country and the world, opening these little storefronts and filling them up. And what was causing that? Because devotees could feel Prabhupada's compassion. They could feel Krishna in his compassion. And they were grateful. And practically all the interactions among devotees were just sharing their gratitude with each other and inspiring that gratitude for what Srila Prabhupada was giving us and what he was asking us to share with each other and the world. Two simple principles. Accept what I've given, Srila Prabhupada said, and share it with others. It has to begin with devotees sharing it with each other. And then we really have a very, very powerful gift to share with the world. How rare it is. We may be thinking, actually, I was talking about Panchatattva in 50 years and 500 years and 5,000 years. It just so happens that the official count of people registered for this yatra is 5,000. But how rare it is. Out of so many billions and billions of humans, and out of limitless living entities that are within this little universe, to be in Vrindavan under Srila Prabhupada's divine grace in Kartik is so rare and so special. You cannot be grateful unless we're humble. An arrogant heart can find no true gratitude. A humble heart is naturally grateful. Trinadapi Sunichena. This is foundational, preliminary principle for true bhakti, is actual humility. Not always just seeking something else, but grateful for the infinite value of what we've been given. And trying to really understand that. Devotees have inclination sometimes, explore this, explore that. But what Lord Chaitanya and Srila Prabhupada wanted us to do is to deeply understand what we've already been given. And if we understand that, if we can connect to that, we will find everything included. When we have a humble heart and we surrender to this path of pure devotional service, Krishna reveals. Yesterday we were discussing Krishna's pastimes in Mahavan. And some of the beautiful stories or leelas from Lord Chaitanya's pastimes that we were remembering in relationship with. In Gokul, Garga Muni came and performed the name-giving ceremony for Krishna and Balaram. In Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, that same Garga Muni incarnated as Nilambar Chakravarti. And he performed the name-giving ceremony for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When Krishna was hardly 1 year old, Kamsa was really frustrated. Srila Prabhupada gives an example of how the tiger is the most ferocious, undefeatable animal in the forest. But yet a little bird, about this big, flies and jumps on the back of the tiger. Because tigers can't reach their backs. They have these massive teeth and massive claws and massive muscular bodies, but they can't reach their back. And this little tiny bird just gets on his back. And wherever the tiger goes, the bird is, in his bird voice, calling out, "The tiger's coming." So all the animals, they know the tiger's coming, and they all run away before the tiger can get close to them. So the tiger's starving. He can't find anything to conquer, anything to eat, because this little bird's on his back. He could swallow that bird in a second if he only had the chance. So this is the nature of material life. However wealthy, however intelligent, however powerful, there's always some things and someone. Maya always has a way to make us suffer. So Kamsa, he wanted to find happiness by conquering. He put his own father, Ugrasena, in prison. He put his own sister and brother-in-law, Vasudeva and Devaki, in prison. He conquered all the kingdoms in the area, and he made allies with all the demoniac kings throughout the world. Such power. But there was this little baby, Krishna. He kept sending demon after demon. Sakatasura, Putana. And then he sent Trinavarta. Trinavarta was a mystic yogi. And he came in the form of a whirlwind. He came into Vrindavan ferociously, a wind roaring, and it created
total pitch darkness. Actually, Yashoda, my Krishna's mother, she was holding Krishna. And just before Trinavarta entered Vrindavan, Krishna knew he was coming. He's just a little child in the arms of his mother. And it was really light. She could just carry him all day. But he understood that this asura was coming. So he assumed an enormously heavy weight. Yashoda Mai was really astonished. How is it that my son is so heavy? It describes he became as heavy as the earth planet. So she couldn't hold him anymore. So she put him down and went to perform her chores. And suddenly, while she was separated from her little Gopal, dust filled the air so you could not even see inches in front of you. And then pitch darkness. And the wind was roaring and twirling. Everyone in Vrindavan was completely engulfed in darkness and dust. And the wind was so strong. It seemed like it was going to destroy everything. But Yashoda Mai, she wasn't thinking about her house. She was thinking of Gopal. My little baby, where is he? She was running frantically in every direction trying to find him. But she couldn't find him. Krishna orchestrated for her to be in such anxiety. If you ever experienced anxiety, multiply it by trillions of times, and you'll get a hint of Yashoda Mai's anxiety. Because what are we in anxiety about? But she loves Krishna with all her heart and soul. She knows nothing in life except her love for Krishna. And Krishna's her child. He's helpless. He's totally dependent upon her. He's vulnerable. His limbs are so tiny and so soft. And here is this massive wind coming. And she can't find him. But this is an anxiety of prem, of love. And therefore, it is actually the deepest ecstasy. She's feeling separation from Krishna. And that love and separation it is the highest satisfaction of the soul. It's dynamic. It has nothing to do with the anxieties of this world. The anxieties of this world are simply anxiety. But in devotional service, they bring Krishna deeper into our hearts. Because the anxiety is for his pleasure, for his happiness. It is described that Yashoda Mai, she was in so much motherly grief that she collapsed to the ground. And the example Shukadev Goswami uses is so appropriate. Just like a cow that has lost her calf. The nature of the love of a cow and a calf is something so pure and beautiful and sacred. All over the world today, so much slaughter, so much torture between the mother and the calf. Krishna, he was given the name Gopal because his primary pastime was to reciprocate love by protecting the cows and the bulls and the calves. So Yashodamaya's little calf, Krishna, she couldn't find him. And then finally, Janavarta picked up Krishna and took him higher and higher and higher in the sky. And he was way up high. Nobody could see. Then the darkness and the dust disappeared, and Krishna was nowhere to be found. Yashoda Mai, the gopis, the gopas, they were searching everywhere for Krishna. He's nowhere. And Krishna's with Janavarta. And Krishna, he became very heavy for his mother, but he became totally light for Janavarta. He was really happy. Children like to take rides. Yes, like to ride on bicycles, like to go on roller coasters, like to be put on their shoulders. I have seen some of my god brothers and god sisters, they have little children and they throw them in the air. And I think, God, I hope it looks scary. And the child is just laughing and laughing and laughing. And I was a brahmachari watching this, I remember. In front of the deities, one of my god brothers would throw his little daughter really high in the air, and she would just be smiling, and she was at her happiest moment when she was way up there, looking down at her father. If she fell to the ground, she would break all her limbs. She wasn't scared, because she had total, innocent, childlike faith that her father is going to catch her. If he missed her, she would probably die or break her skull and everything else. And brahmacharis think like that. If he doesn't catch her, she's going to break her legs and break her skull. Oh, she'll be a puddle of blood laying on this marble floor in front of the deities. And he would throw her up, and I would be in fear watching this. And she would be just laughing and laughing and smiling, because she had faith in her father's protection. Bajahure Manasri Nanda Nandana Abhaya Charanada Vendare. Well, we actually, by hearing about Krishna, by associating with people who have faith in Krishna, by connecting to Krishna through chanting his name with humility and sincerity, we understand that Krishna will always be there for us. And then we become fearless. It's a childlike, innocent, natural fearlessness. Agasura. He was a snake that was 8 miles long. Now, I've seen some of you from our renounced brahmacharis. They see a little snake this big, and they definitely feel some fear.
Agasura?
He was from his intestines. There was a horrible smell coming out because of all the different people he already ate. So he was ferocious. But the cowherd boys, they just looked at Krishna and smiled and danced right into his mouth. Agasura's mouth. And even the calves. Even the calves were smiling and dancing into the mouth of Agasura. Because they just had, Krishna will protect us. Of course, God helps them who help themselves. So we have to help ourselves. But ultimately, we do our part and we leave the rest to Krishna. So Krishna was enjoying taking a ride higher and higher. And according to our acharyas, he wanted to give darshan to the residents of the heavenly planets. So he actually inspired Trinavarta to take him that high into the sky. And Trinavarta, his only purpose was to murder little Gopal. And Gopal knew that. So he started increasing his bodily weight until he became so heavy that Trinavarta couldn't hold him any longer. He wanted to kill this little child. He couldn't go any higher. So he wanted to throw little Gopal down to the ground. But Gopal, with his tiny little arm, he didn't expand himself to be big. He was just little. Trinavarta was huge. He put his arm around Trinavarta's neck and squeezed. And this whirlwind Asura, with all of his might, was trying to tear Krishna away from him. But Krishna just squeezed harder. And ultimately he was choking and his eyes started popping out. And he lost all of his strength and came down. Crashed onto the ground. The holy ground of Vrindavan. And all his limbs were scattered in all directions and his bones were disjointed. And the Brijabasis heard this massive sound of his body collapsing. Trinavarta was liberated. Which is a spiritual way of saying he was dead. But when Krishna kills, he liberates. That is his great mercy. And meanwhile, Yashoda Mai, when she heard that crashing sound in the ground, she was even more worried about Krishna. What is that? Where is Gopal? And all the Brijabasis were searching. Where is Krishna? He Radhe Brijadeva Ke Chavalite Inanda Suno. The six Goswamis, when they were living in Vrindavan, they were always wandering from place to place. Where is Radharani? Where is Krishna, the son of Nanda? This yearning for Krishna, this longing for Krishna, this lolyam, is the greatest gift that we should cultivate. The Brijavasis, they saw Krishna playing, very blissfully smiling. He hardly even knew how to crawl at this time. But he was just blissfully smiling on the body of Trinavarta. And they went and picked him up and brought him to Yashoda Mai. And she embraced him and nourished him with her own milk. And her and the other Brijavasis, they performed so many wonderful little pujas to Lord Narayan to protect Krishna. I'm remembering a story from Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu's Leela. When Nimai was just a little child, very small, he was just walking. He was playing in the front courtyard of the house of Sachi and Jagannath Mishra. And two demoniac thieves, they happened to see him. Here's this little Nimai. He's such a fragile little babe, little child, just learning to walk. And he had nice ornaments on him that his mother would put on. And the thieves, they were saying, what a fortunate, auspicious day this is for us. And helpless little child with precious ornaments, let us kidnap him and rob him. So there were people around. So they were very, very intelligent. They went up to little Nimai and said, oh, child, it looks like you're trying to find your way home. We will take you home. We will take you home. And they picked up Nimai and put on their shoulders and started walking really fast. And they had Sandesh. And they kept giving Nimai Sandesh. And he was on their back, he was on their shoulders, taking a ride. And they were going deeper and deeper, different places, and they kept giving him sweets, and he was just smiling and laughing and eating the sweets. Their motive was to take him a distance away to their secret headquarters, where they would take him down and rob him. And they went a long distance. And sometimes they were going through people. And they wanted to look really innocent. So as people were passing by, they would say, we're taking you home, child. Here, eat some sweets. And Nimai would just be eating sweets and laughing. He was so happy. He was taking a ride. And ultimately, they came. Well, what happened is this. Jagannath Mishra and Sachi Devi and their relatives and their friends and their neighbors, they come to the courtyard and they cannot find Nimai. He's gone. They're searching all eight directions. They're asking everyone. He's gone. The same love of Nanda and Yashoda was there for Jagannath Mishra and Sachi. Their Prananath, the Lord of their heart, the Lord of their life, was gone. We cannot calculate the amount of loving, ecstatic grief they were in, how they worried. They felt so helpless. Wherever they searched, they couldn't find him. There was no clue. They didn't even know where else to search. They were all just sitting with their heads down, crying, weeping, worrying. And Nimai was so expertly bringing these emotions out of them. And by his own divine potency, the thieves, who had wicked intentions, they thought they were at their headquarters, their hideout.
And they said, oh, child, now you can get down. We have reached our place.
But little did they know that Nimai brought them right to the front of his house.
And as soon as they put him down, Nimai ran across the courtyard and jumped right in the lap of Jagannath Mishra and Sachidevi.
And after Vipralamba Sambhog is very sweet, after this separation,
the ultimate celebration of love was Nimai is here. And they were checking his limbs to make sure he was nice and happy, and he was smiling, and he was embracing them, and they were embracing him. And they asked, what happened? What happened? Meanwhile, when the thieves saw Nimai's parents, let's get out of here. So they ran really, they kind of disguised themselves and ran as fast as they could to escape. And they asked, Nimai, what happened? He said, I got lost. And two really nice men, they were so kind that they picked me up and they brought me home. They said, well, we should reward these people. They brought you home and they got nice gifts of turbans and other things, but they couldn't find them anywhere. Vrindavan Das Thakur explains how fortunate those thieves were. We, in order to make an offering of bhoga to Krishna, to Lord Chaitanya, we take our baths, we get Brahman initiation, we have mantras and yantras and tantras, mujas and pudas. So many, in order to please the Lord, we should follow very carefully. But these thieves, they didn't take baths. They didn't do any mantras or tantras or yantras or mudras or pujas. They were just giving him sandesh. And he was eating it. And he was enjoying it. He allowed them to render loving devotional service, even though they didn't know it. He accepted it. And not only that, Samsidhiyat Haritoshiram, he made them so happy. He made Nimai so happy by giving him a ride all over Navadvip. So they attained the perfection of life. Krishna and Balaram, when they started to crawl, it was so enchanting to the hearts of the Vrijabhasis. Rohini Devi, the mother of Balaram and Yashoda Mai, would decorate their children with sandalwood, chandan, and saffron. And they would put nice little ornaments, and they would put bells. And the children, they would crawl in the cow dung that was mixed with cow urine and mud. That was their favorite ornament. They would crawl in it, and their bodies would be smeared with the dung and the urine and the cows and the dust of Vrindavan. And they were so happy. And Yashoda and Rohini were so happy to see this. They would pick up their little children and embrace them and feed them. Sometimes when Krishna and Balaram were crawling, they would hear ankle bells, because both of their mothers wore ankle bells. And they would see the feet and the legs of some gopis, our mothers. And they would crawl and crawl and crawl and crawl to to follow the sound of those ankle bells and reach their mothers. And then when they reached them, they looked up, and it was two other gopis. So they would become afraid, and they would crawl back looking for Mother Yashoda and Mother Rohini, and they would be watching and lift their children. And as they opened their mouths to feed them milk, they would see little tiny white teeth starting to grow. And it would give them such happiness. Srimad Bhagavatam explains how they would be talking to each other about the little teeth. And they would count how many teeth were in the mouth of each child, just coming out of their mouths. Sometimes the children, they'd crawl and they'd see a little calf laying down and pull the tail of the calf. And the calf would become very excited and jump up and start running, and they would hold on to the calf's tail. They were afraid to let go, and they were very happy. And the calf would be running and running, and they'd be dragged through the urine and the dung and the dirt. And all the gopis would be watching. And such joy, watching the beautiful childhood pastimes of Krishna and Balaram. Then they learned how to walk. It is explained that Yashoda Maya Nanda Maharaj, they would hold a finger out, and Krishna would hold on to the finger as they were teaching him to walk. And sometimes he would fall down. And they would encourage him, please try again, Krishna would get up. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells he's the ability of all men and all women. He's the supreme power of all powers. But in Vrindavan, under the control of the love of his parents, Vatsalya Ras, he's learning to walk. And he's not just pretending. He's actually learning to walk. Just to give pleasure to his parents. And to feel the intimate, infinite pleasure of their love for him. One time, Balaram and the gopas approached Yashoda Mai, and they said, on the bank of Yamuna, we saw Krishna secretly eating dirt. Now, for a mother, this is a very serious matter. So Yashoda Mai was very disturbed. Krishna, you'll get sick if you eat dirt. Why did you eat dirt? I'm giving you so many sweets and so much nice prasad. Why are you eating dirt? Krishna said, I didn't eat dirt. She said, but your friends are telling me you did eat dirt. He said, that's because they were stealing butter from some gopis' houses, and I told them, you shouldn't be doing this. And thinking that I would tell on them, they're making up this story to get me in trouble. Yashoda Mai, she said, but even Balaram, your own brother, is telling me that you ate dirt. He said, it is not true. If you don't believe me, look in my mouth. But he did eat dirt. So,
from a philosophical perspective, how could the absolute truth tell a lie? The absolute truth does not lie. Because in Vrindavan, everything is based on love. You see, in this material world, what we call a lie is when we're trying to protect ourselves from something we did, or protect others, or just ashamed to admit certain things. But whatever Krishna speaks in Vrindavan, it's only to increase the love of his devotees. It's only to reciprocate with the love of his devotees. So Yashoda Mai said, yes, open your mouth. And there was dirt in his mouth. So Krishna had his own way of distracting her. By his yogamaya potency, the entire universe entered his mouth. Yashoda Mai looked in his little mouth. It was only a few inches in diameter. But she saw all the oceans, all the mountains, all the forests, all the planets of the entire universe. She saw all the demigods, all the species of life. She saw Gokul in Krishna's mouth. She saw herself looking in Krishna's mouth. And Yashoda Mai, at first she became philosophical. Who is my child? What am I seeing? Garga Muni, during his name-giving ceremony, he told that our child, Krishna, is Narayan. But what does Garga Muni know? When Krishna's hungry, he comes running to me and crying, and he's not satisfied till I feed him my milk. And Krishna steals and he lies. And when thunder is in the sky, Krishna runs to me, and until I embrace him, he doesn't stop trembling. Garga Muni and any sage or rishi could think what they want to think, but Krishna knows, and I know, that I'm his mother, and he's my son. And then she started thinking, maybe he's sick. And she got worried about him, seeing the universe in his mouth. And Krishna smiled. And when Krishna smiled, his beauty, his sweetness, his charm totally melted away the remembrance of everything she had just seen. And with her motherly affection, she embraced him and fed him her own milk. When Nimai was a child, one day when he was playing with his friends, Sachi Devi brought him a beautiful plate of sweets and fused rice, which is very delicious, and which was Nimai's favorite. And then she went to perform some of her duties, and when she came back, she saw that Nimai was eating dirt. And she was told by some of his friends, he's eating dirt. So Nimai had his own way of performing Krishna's leelas. Sachidevi was as worried about her little Nimai as Yashoda was for Gopal. Why are you eating dirt? Don't you know that you're going to get really sick? You could die if you eat dirt. Why are you doing this? I've given you such nice, delicious sweetmeats. They're right in front of you, and you're not touching them. You're just eating the dirt from the ground. Why?
And Nimai smiled.
He said, Mother,
what are these sweetmeats, and what is this rice?
They're just transformations of dirt. They come from the ground, little seeds. The dirt nourishes them. In fact, my body and your body are just transformations of dirt. So practically everything in this world is a transformation of dirt. So what's the difference if I eat dirt and if I eat sweetmeats? They're the same thing.
Sachi Mata, she said, where have you heard this impersonal philosophy?
He's saying everything's one. She's saying it's true, everything is one. But at the same time, there's variegatedness within that oneness. Yes, rice and sweetmeats are transformations of dirt. But if you eat rice and sweetmeats, you'll become very satisfied and healthy. And if you eat dirt, you will get sick. Similarly, if you want to carry water, if you put it in an earth pot, you can carry the water anywhere you want. But if you put the water on dirt, it'll just become mud. You can't carry it anywhere. She was teaching the principle of Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva, inconceivable oneness and difference. Mamaivam so jivaloke. Qualitatively, we are all one with God, just like a sun ray is one with the sun planet. But quantitatively, we are part and parcel. And the oneness is our nature, Sachidananda, eternal, full of knowledge and bliss, because Krishna, Ishvara Parama Krishna Sachidananda Vigraha. That is his nature. But the variegatedness, the eternal variegatedness of the personal nature that Krishna empowers each of us with, facilitates bhava, ecstatic love, praying, understanding our eternal relationship with Krishna. So bhakti understands the unity and the variegatedness of our relationship with Krishna and our relationships with each other. When Sachimata explained this bhakti philosophy to Nimai, Nimai smiled and said, why did you not teach me this beautiful philosophy before? Now I am completely detached from eating dirt, and I will be very happy to drink your milk. And what is that milk? He's not drinking milk. He's drinking prem. The milk of Yashoda and the milk of Sachidevi, when we read about it, we should understand it. In truth, it is the overwhelming, spontaneous expression of their ecstatic love as a mother for their child. And Krishna is tasting their love. And that milk, because it is premaras, it's ever increasing in sweetness. And as they are offering their milk, it is ever increasing their love. When Krishna accepts our love grows. And that love only makes Krishna's love grow. Shukadev Goswami tells that when Krishna and Balaram learned how to walk, the first thing they started doing was stealing butter. Sarva Loka Maheshwaram. Krishna says, everything in this world is coming from me. Everything is my property. Aham sarvasya prabhavamata sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvata. If everything belongs to God, what can he steal? But these pastimes are simply about stealing the hearts of his devotees. Kavi Karnapur tells that once Krishna was stealing the butter from one of the pots of Yashoda Bai. And as he was eating the butter, kind of looking around to make sure his mother was not coming, he happened to see a jeweled pillar in front of him. And the reflection of his own form was there in the jeweled pillar. And Krishna saw that and became very concerned. And he started talking to his own reflection as if it were somebody else. This is Leela. He said, my friend, I know that you're seeing me stealing butter, but please don't tell my mother. I promise you, if you do not tell my mother after I finish eating this butter, I will share it with you, and it's really good. And while he's talking to his own reflection like this, Yashoda Mai is watching from behind him, and she's smiling. It's so sweet. His words are broken like a little child. And as she starts walking up to him, Krishna sees her coming. He said, I didn't steal the butter. I didn't steal the butter. You see the butter? It's on the ground. It wasn't me. It was him. And he pointed to reflection. He said, I told him, don't steal my mother's butter. It's not right. But he didn't listen to me. His mother is very happy. Another time, Yashoda Mai went out into the outside courtyard, and she left Krishna alone in the house, and he stuck his hand in a butter pot and started to eat it. And she happened to come in when his hand was still in the butter pot. And Krishna immediately, he said, I'm not stealing butter. She said, what are you doing? He said, you put these bangles on me that have rubies, and they're so hot, they're burning my hands and they're burning my wrist. So just to get some relief, I stuck it in my hands in the butter. And Yashoda Mai took his hand out of the pot, and she looked at it. And in her motherly love, she said, oh, Gopal,
It's true. Your hands are burnt. I will take off the ruby bangles. And she started kissing his hands. And Krishna and his friends would go to the gopis' houses. And the gopis, they were so charmed. The only reason they churned butter was with the hope that Krishna would come to steal it. That was the satisfaction of their hearts. Everything was for Krishna's pleasure. But just to taste the sweetness of speaking his pastimes, and just for Yashodamai to taste the sweetness of hearing them, they would come to her to complain against Krishna. They would say, Yashodamai, you are a very respectable lady, and we don't want to say anything inappropriate, but we have to tell you that your son is creating chaos in our homes in the early morning. With his friends, he unties the calves, and they go and they drink the milk of the mothers, and then we're chasing after the calves and the cows. And then he comes to our houses, and Krishna and his friends, they will eat as much as they desire from our butter pots. And then they will call the monkeys from the forest. And the monkeys will come in our house, and they will feed the monkeys to the full satisfaction until the monkeys can't hold any more butter in their bellies. And then Krishna will take the pots and break them on the floor and throw the butter on the ground and say, this butter is so useless, even monkeys don't want it. And sometimes, in order to protect the butter and yogurt from Krishna and his friends, we put it in pots and hang it high up in the ceiling from ropes. But Krishna and his friends, they get all kinds of boxes and grinding mortars, and they stack them up, and they climb to get the butter. And if it's still too high, Krishna has a special stick that's pointed at the end, and poof, from on top of the crates, he puts a hole in the pot, and the butter comes down, and they drink it and feed it to monkeys. And sometimes when it's dark, because of the jewels you put on Krishna, it lights up, and they could see everything. So Yashodamai said, then I will not put jewels on him. They said, no, don't do that. Because these children, their own bodies give such beautiful light. They could see everything in the darkness. And sometimes when we hide our butter and yogurt so well that they can't find it, they will go into our temples and pass urine and stool on the floor. Now that is very deep philosophy. I always use this example. My dear friends, brothers, sisters, no offense. How many times in your lives have you passed urine and stool? Do you have any estimation? Does anyone care? Is anyone ecstatically discussing it? Krishna did it 5,000 years ago, one time. And there's 5,000 of us falling in love with Krishna just hearing about it.
That is Krishna. He's all attractive. Whatever he does, even the most apparently simple and ordinary things. Mahavishnu exhales, and limitless universes come out of the pores of his body. With a moment glance, he impregnates all those universes with all living entities. And then he activates the universes with time. There are so many incredible stories that we read. Lord Varahadev, he lifted the earth on his nose and the tusks. But Krishna, everything he did was so normal. In Vrindavan, even the greatest demons that came, he never used a weapon. He would just, in a very ordinary, simple little way, he just, little tiny hand, he would just go and hit them. Or Bakasura, he would just take his little hand and go. This is Vrindavan, Madhurya town, where even when Krishna passes urine, it's the sweetest thing that melts and charms our hearts forever. So gopis are complaining. And when Krishna's upset because he can't find our butter and yogurt, he goes to our sleeping babies and pinches them and makes them cry. And now look at your little Krishna. He looks so innocent. He looks afraid. He looks afraid that you might believe what we're saying. But sometimes we catch Krishna. We actually catch him. Usually he runs away and we can't catch him, but when we do catch him, he smiles. And that smile enchants our hearts so much that we're paralyzed with love for him, and he runs away. And other times we say, Krishna, you're a thief. And he smiles and he says, no, you're a thief. Now he looks so innocent. But we know in his heart, he's just strategically planning of how he will steal butter from our houses tomorrow. When our hearts become as soft as freshly churned butter, Krishna will steal our hearts. Makanchwar. It was the ultimate joy of the life of the gopis, just awaiting Krishna to come to their homes to accept their offerings in such a beautiful pastime. And I'm remembering when Nimai was a little boy, a student. The residents of Navadvip would come to complain to Sachi Devi and Jagannath Mishra about him. This is when he was going to school. After school, every day with his friends, Nimai would go to the Ganga. And they would spend about 6 hours playing. And how would they play? One day, some of the Brahmins came. And they told Jagannath Mishra, please hear what we have to say. We're seriously worried about your son. We go to the Ganga to perform sacred ceremonies. We're Brahmins. That's the place where we do our meditation and puja.
One Brahmin said, when I'm meditating, Nimai will jump on my shoulders and say, I am Shiva, and break my meditation.
Another said, I'm meditating, and Nimai will come underwater and get right in front of me and spray from his mouth Ganga water all over my face. He spit on me. I'm a Brahmin, he spit on me.
Another said, you know, we're trying to do our puja, and he kicks the water and splashes all over us.
And somehow or other, after we take our holy bath, when we come out of the water, he throws sand all over us. And then we have to go back in to wash the sand off. And then as soon as we come out, he and his friends will throw the sand back at us. And we try to catch him, and he dives underwater and swims away and escapes.
He does this every day.
One Brahmin said, I was half submerged in the holy river Ganga, and I was chanting my Gayatri mantra, and suddenly from underwater, Nimai grabbed my feet and pulled me underwater.
Another said, I was reading my Bhagavad Gita, and Nimai stole it away from me.
And do you know what else he does?
The men bathe in one ghat. The ladies bathe in another ghat. Nimai and his friends, while the ladies are taking their bath and while we're taking our baths, secretly, they put the men's clothes on the ladies' side and the ladies' clothes on the men's side. We come out of the Ganga, and there's saris. The ladies come out of the Ganga, and there's copans.
Something like that.
And dhotis. And he does this every day.
And Jagannath Mishra, he was very much affected by these Brahmins.
He said, 6 hours every day he does this. He doesn't leave the water. What will happen to him as he grows up?
And then the girls, little girls, they approach Sachi Devi and said, you are a respectable mother for all of us, and we don't want to complain. But if we tell our parents what your son does, they're going to really have a fight with you.
We're little girls. We take our bath in the Ganga. As soon as we come out, Nimai and his friends throw sand all over our bodies. So we have to bathe again and again and again. And sometimes after we take our bath, he takes very sticky okada seeds and throws them in our hair.
Another little girl said, she's just a little girl. She said, your Nimai said, I want to marry you.
And we do pujas. Because it's our tradition to get a good husband, we do puja to Lord Vishnu. So we have our little altar set up on the bank of the Ganges, and we have sweets, and we have flowers, and we take water from the Ganges, and we go in to take our bath before we do our puja. And while we're in their Ganges, Nimai sits on the little throne of Vishnu and eats all the sweets and puts all the flowers and garlands in his hair around his neck. And we say, what are you doing? Do you have no respect for Vishnu?
And he says, I am that Vishnu. Just keep bringing everything to me. If you do, I will bless you, that you will have a loving, caring, handsome husband, and wonderful, learned, healthy children. Just give me more of your offerings. And then some of the girls got really afraid and they started running away. And Nephi called to them, if you don't come back and give me your offerings, then you will have very ugly, aged husbands with four co-wives and useless children. So the girls would run back and give all of them. Said, what can we do? We come back and give them all our garlands and all of our sweets and all of our other offerings. And he eats everything. But the girls were so happy complaining. And the Brahmins were so happy complaining. And Mother Sachi just embraced them and said, yes, yes, I will talk to Nemai. Thank you. But Jagannath Mishra was really angry. And he picked up a stick and went to the Ganga to give a good lesson to Nemai. But all the girls, the little girls, they went running from a different direction. And they saw Nemai with his friends in the Ganga. And they said, Nemai, your father's coming. Escape, escape. And Nemai smiled. And he told his other friends, if my father asks, tell him that from school I went directly home and I didn't take the road to the Ganga. And then Nemai disappeared. And a few seconds later, Jagannath Mishra arrives and he's looking in all directions. And he says, where is Nemai? And the little children said, he didn't come to the Ganga today. He went by another direction home. And the Brahmins, the same ones that complained, they came to Jagannath Mishra and they said, you and Sachi Devi are the most fortunate people in the entire creation to have Nemai as your son. We were only complaining out of love. And Jagannath Mishra embraced all those Brahmins and said, please bless my son. Please forgive him if he's done anything wrong and give him your blessings. And meanwhile, Jagannath Mishra came home and he's telling Sachi, and then Nemai arrives. His hair is completely dry. In fact, it has dust all over it. His body is completely dry. He even has ink spots from being in school on his hands. And Jagannath Mishra said, why are you causing so much disturbance? Don't you have respect for the Brahmins? And you're eating the offerings of Lord Vishnu. He said, no, I didn't even go to the Ganga today. Don't you see? I just came from school. And then he smiled. And he said, but if they are complaining against me when I didn't even go there, then I will go there and I will show them. And then he ran to the Ganga. And when he arrived, all his friends were waiting for him and he dove in and they said, Nemai, you are so intelligent. And he began his leelas again. And Jagannath Mishra and Sachi Devi, they were wondering, how is it possible that he came? It's impossible for him to be so dry with dust on his body and just coming from school. Who is our son? But he's just our son. and we love him.
One of the gopis actually caught Krishna stealing her butter. And she grabbed Krishna by the hand and said, I'm taking you to Yashoda Mai. Because every time we come to her, they say, well, you always complain, but you can't prove it. Today I'm going to prove it. You have butter on your face, you have butter on your hands, and I have you, and I'm going to take you to your mother.
And little Gopal smiled at her and said, I warn you, do not take me to my mother. And this older gopi, she was actually the wives of one of Nanda Maharaj's brothers, Upananda. She brought little Gopal in front of Mother Yashoda and started complaining. She said, Yashoda Mai, just see. Now you should believe us. I caught him. There's butter all over him, my butter, and this is your son.
And Yashoda Mai was looking at him and turned to the gopi and said, Yashoda Mai said, I don't understand. That's not my son. And the gopi looked down and she was holding hand of her own son. Yashoda Mai said, your own son is stealing your butter and you're blaming Krishna. She was bewildered. She walked away. And she's holding the hand of her son. And as they go down the road, the son laughs. And she looks down, and it's Krishna who manifested the form of her son. And Krishna looked at her and said, I warned you. Next time you do it, I will take the form of your husband. Should I continue or end? I think I should end and continue tomorrow. Because if I continue, I don't know what will happen. But I'll continue. Tomorrow is Diwali, the festival of lights, the celebration of Lord Ramchandra returning after 14 years of exile with Sita and Lakshman to Ayodhya. And the celebration of the love of the lamps of the love of all the inhabitants of Ayodhya to welcome Ram home after long separation. On that day, Yashoda Mai decided to personally churn butter for Krishna. And I'm going to make this brief, because it's late. But out of 900,000 cows under the care of Nanda Maharaj, the very, very best cows that gave the best milk, she would feed them the most luscious grass that she would water with the milk of those best cows. And the grass smelled so sweet with the fragrance of lotus flowers. And she took that essence of all milk and personally, with her own motherly love, was churning it. And she was churning the yogurt. It was early morning.
Krishna was sleeping. And because she was doing it for Krishna, she was remembering Krishna. She was singing a beautiful kirtan describing the qualities, the beauty, the sweetness, the pastimes of her Gopal. And as she was singing, her motherly love was awakening in so many beautiful ways. Milk started flowing from her breasts. Her bangles were keeping a beautiful rhythm to the kirtan. Her hair was loosening, flowers were coming down. She was completely absorbed. The essence of samadhi. Not only to be totally absorbed in the single remembrance of the beauty and sweetness and the love of Krishna, but it was active samadhi, to do something for the pleasure of Krishna. This is Vrindavan Bhakti. Krishna, while he was laying in his bed, he could feel the motherly love for Yashoda, and he became hungry to receive it. So he jumped out of the bed, and he ran to the place where Yashoda Mai was churning, and he stood right between the churning rod and his mother. I am thirsty for your love. And he jumped on Yashoda Mai's lap and began to drink her milk. Suddenly, in the next room, there was milk being boiled on the stove, and it started boiling over. That was that very special milk, Padmaganda milk. It was meant specifically for Krishna's satisfaction. So Yashoda Mai put down Krishna for a moment to run to take the milk off the fire. But while she was gone, Krishna wanted to show how he yearned for her undivided attention. So with a stone for grinding spices, he broke the clay pot and started eating it. And then he went to the next room, and there was butter hanging from the ropes, and he took a wooden grinding mortar and climbed on top of it and took that butter and started eating it. And then he called his friends and fed it to them. He called the monkeys who jumped in from the forest. He was feeding all of them. And meanwhile, he was very, very apparently fearful, looking side by side to make sure his mother was not approaching. Yashoda Mai came to where she left Krishna, and there the pot of yogurt was broken. And she saw these little yogurt footprints. And she trailed them into the courtyard where she saw Krishna on the grinding mortar feeding the monkeys and the children. And she picked up a little stick and she quietly approached Krishna from behind. But when the monkeys saw Yashoda Mai coming, they started jumping out in all directions away, running away, and the children, the cowherd boys, were running away, and Krishna looked side by side, and he saw right behind him his mother. He jumped off the grinding mortar to escape. Yashoda ran after him. He ran, she ran, and he ran, and she ran. How can you catch the absolute truth? Even the greatest scholars who know Vedanta,
even the greatest yogis who have mystic perfections and siddhis.
You cannot catch God. But Yashoda Mai was chasing after him. And as she was running, she was getting more and more tired, and her sari was loosening, and her hair was loosening, and ultimately, conquered by the love of his devotee, he agreed to be caught by her. She was holding his hand, and she showed him the little stick and said, "Krishna, why did you steal the butter? Because you associate with monkeys, you have become like a monkey." And Krishna, he said, "I won't do it again. Please put down the stick." Yashoda Mai never used the stick except to show it. She threw it away. And Krishna was crying. In the Damodarastaka, Satyavrata Muni tells the beautiful story of the description, the kajal, the black ornament or cosmetic that Yashoda Mai puts on Krishna's eyes. His tears were mixing with them, and it was making streaks across his beautiful little body. His lips were quivering. His limbs were trembling in fear of Mother Yashoda. Yashoda Mai had so many things to do that day, and to protect Krishna from mischief, she took a really soft rope, one that's used for calves, to tie Krishna to the grinding mortar. But when she put it around his little waist, it was the distance of 2 fingers, or about 2 inches, too short. She tied more rope to that. It was exactly 2 inches too short. More rope, until all the rope in her house. The rope was getting longer and longer and longer, and Krishna's little waist was the same size, but still it was 2 inches too short. This was incredible. Soon other gopis from other houses was bringing all the beautiful different colored silk ropes that they had in their houses. And they were all helping Yashoda Mai. It was a festival of ropes. They were all tying and tying and tying, and she would put it around, and it was 2 fingers too short. And this was going on. And Yashoda Mai was really, really working hard, and so were all the other gopis. And one gopi said to Yashoda Mai that it doesn't appear to be Krishna's destiny to be tied up today. And Yashoda Mai said, "As his mother, I must protect him. And besides that, I really want to see how much rope it will take to go around my little son's stuffed belly." When Krishna saw the incredible enthusiasm, determination in the love of his mother, he allowed himself to be bound. The enthusiastic efforts of the devotee and the causeless mercy of the Lord, that is what those 2 fingers represent. The determined enthusiasm efforts of us. When it is done sincerely, our devotional service, it attracts Krishna's mercy. And Krishna is bound. He is controlled by the love of his devotee. Yashodamayi then, feeling Krishna was protected, she left that place. And Krishna looked in front of him and was thinking, because my mother has done this to me, I will even cause more mischief. And he had a strategic plan, which we will discuss tomorrow. Thank you very much.